This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Hear from the woman who wants to lead McLean County's Republican Party. She says a lot of people might be surprised how far to the right Central Illinois Republicans lean.
They've allowed the public media to paint this image of what a conservative philosophy or the conservative principles are.
Connie Beard talks with GLT's Ryan Denham about expanding the GOP in Bloomington Normal. Get a preview of Friday's Puerto Rico teach-in. The U.S. territory is still dealing with lingering hurricane destruction and a lack of electricity. And it's music from and conversation with Chris Corkery. He's opening for Paul Thorne at the Castle Theater tonight. John Norton has the interview. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's January 18th, 2018. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. If President Trump has taught us anything, it's that the way you communicate your political beliefs matter more than ever. The McLean County Republican Party will need a communicator-in-chief, too. The party is facing a tough election year with energized Democrats and Libertarian candidates looking to unseat Republican incumbents. Party Chairman Chuck Erickson announced last week he's stepping down in April. The party's former vice chair, Connie Beard, says she wants to succeed him. GLT's Ryan Denham talks with Beard about her approach to the Republican message and the direction she hopes to take the party.
I want to be of service. I have always desired to serve wherever the door is open for me to step in. And with our current chairman, Chuck Erickson, deciding not to bid for an election re-election in the April convention, obviously there was going to be a need for someone to step up. And my involvement over the years with their local Republican Party has been an enjoyment for me, has been rewarding on many levels. And I do believe that there are some contributions I can make for our county Republicans in the next 2 years or however long they deem be suited to serve as county chair.
There's a narrative building that 2018 might not be a great year for Republicans locally for a bunch of reasons that we'll get into. Did that give you any pause about going for this?
Actually, I like a challenge. I have a little bit of a competitive nature in me. And to have a task that deems to be difficult is what causes me to step up and say, well, let's find out how we can overcome that. I think there are a lot of steps that we can take to push back what we as Republicans view as a Democratic battle forming and be able to explain our principles and our views in a way that might push back a little bit of that. So I'd say let's go for it.
Any party is shaped, even in small ways, by its leader, right? John Parrott preceded Chuck Erickson as party chair, and Chuck has had that job since 2014. So what direction would you take the party?
I think one of my strong suits is that of being a communicator. I have often felt that communication is often the first thing that breaks down in a group and in a community. If people are not sharing their thoughts and ideas in respectful, civil manner, then no one's gaining anything. And to be able to have exchanges of ideas is the vital part to helping a community discover who they are and what they need to do. And I love people. I love to look and find the strengths and talents that somebody has and find out how they can start magnifying those talents and applying those talents in whatever settings that they're needed. So that combination of searching for people's and that have the talent and the skill that can contribute to the Republican Party, and then in turn taking those the principles of the Republican Party and sharing them with community in a way that garners respect, in a way that garners education and movement forward, I relish that. That's what I would hope we can achieve moving forward.
And you said you want to do more to promote the Republican Party principles through through public forums or multimedia. Mm-hmm. So what do you have in mind exactly?
Well, rather than having a defined list of what those things could be, my first thought is to tap into the creativity and brainstorming powers that people have to think outside of the box. I truly believe that a lot of people would be surprised that they may very well have far more conservative principles than they realize, because they've allowed the public media to paint this image of what a conservative philosophy or the conservative principles are, and they're buying into that. And that's not necessarily the true definition of what conservative principles are. So let's have some good discussions over in a safe environment where we can exchange ideas and help form a cohesive approach to solving our community problems. We've got problems in the community that need to be addressed.
And speaking of those community problems, you said in your statement announcing your candidacy that one thing you want to focus on is local municipal governing bodies and trying to tie the Republican principles to actual local government. What shape could that take? Could the party get more involved in city councils, county board, other places?
Well, I think it's as much as having our spotlight put onto different actions, different decisions, different elements of our municipalities. And saying, are these decisions that are being made, are they truly matching up to what conservative Republican principles would say they are? It's not, and it's acknowledging that there are so many elements that come into play. There's not, you can't be a hard and fast, it's not always black and white. It really isn't. But sometimes it is black and white. Sometimes it is. Is this a principle that's really going to be beneficial to the taxpayer, to the families of our community? Does that decision line up with that principle? And challenge our governing elected officials to face up to what they have done, to acknowledge what is right and for the people. And I'm talking about in a broad sense. It's easy kind of to develop a plan or a policy that suits a small segment of our society. But what is it, the overall benefit to the whole community? That sometimes I think it's overlooked, because a small vocal group can push forward something to take place in our community, and it's not beneficial to the community at large.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Connie Beard, who's hoping to become the next chair of the McLean County Republican Party. Connie, you're not challenging Chuck Erickson. He's stepping down after a couple of terms as chair. He plans to stay involved with the party in addition to serving as a county board member and his day job as an attorney. So what did you think of his tenure as party chairman?
Oh, I thought he accomplished amazing things for our party. I thought the improvement in communications with our multimedia, the Facebook, the website, our ability to have a communication system in place for Republican members of the executive committee, the fundraising that he was able to accomplish for our candidates so that we could support them and encourage our Republican candidates. That was just icing on the cake. I think he did a marvelous job. I see what he did as placing some good building blocks in place, just as John Parrott before him placed good building blocks in place. I'm hoping to come along and just keep adding to that, to take us to the level where the current circumstances demand that we be involved and we be engaged in our community.
And I've interviewed Chuck several times, and he was an ardent and unapologetic supporter of Republican causes, and that certainly came through when you sat across from him. He's sometimes caught a little heat for that, I mean, including some comments he made on the party's official Facebook page. How well do you think he handled the messaging side of the job, and would you approach things any differently?
Everyone has different gifts and talents. Everyone has a different personality of type and a different tone and a different way they approach things. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily wrong. It suits a certain person. I would never want Chuck or anyone else to function in a way that was contrary to what flowed for them. I think everyone's got different gifts. And the gifts that Chuck has, he's applied them and used them well in the last 4 years. I have different gifts. I'm a different person. I'm a different personality. So I couldn't emulate what Chuck did. I can't emulate what other previous chairmen have done. All I can do is come to the position in hopes that the precinct committeeman will let me serve in the way that I am created. I'm a believer that God's gifted us each different ways, and we all have our own talents and our own skills. And the the key is to figure that out and then to use them in the most effective way you can. I would love to see us having more conversations that, although I am an ardent conservative, I hold fast to principles that are just as conservative as Chuck and John Parrott and those that have come before me. But I have a little bit different approach to sharing those principles with other people. I like to hear people's hearts. I like to hear what they think, what they're thinking. I like to connect with people on a level that can really make a lasting impact and a change. And some people may think that's not going to make a mass difference in the world, but it may not. It may only affect a handful of people that I can come in contact with. But that's okay. Because if I can come in contact with a handful of people and make a difference and win them to what I think are sound conservative principles, then they in turn can go out and contact and make and convince other people.
What's your view of how the political demographics are shifting in McLean County? President Trump won the county as a whole, but by less than Mitt Romney and John McCain, the Republican candidates before him. Where do you see the county headed politically?
I certainly do recognize that we have a resurgence of a Democratic push in our county. And some may panic about that idea and cause great concern. I do say it's a good wake-up call. It should be a wake-up call for those Republicans that have been taking it for granted that we are a solid Republican county. Once you start taking something for granted, apathy sets in, and you feel like, well, there's no need to get involved. There's no need to do anything. So I welcome a good challenge. I welcome that we can start asking people to wake up and get involved and recognize that if you don't stand and express and vote, then you are going to lose what you have valued. And so although the Democrats are making a very good stand right now and a big push, it's not to say that when you kind of wake the giant bear, the sleeping bear, whatever analogy you want to use, that the Republican voters in our county are starting to wake up and recognize that. And therefore, I think we'll be willing to, I don't like to use the analogy of fighting or battling, but I think they will stand up and stand strong for their principles and push back and say, we're not going to be allowed to be pushed out of the and our voice quieted and pushed away into a closet somewhere.
As you mentioned, you've got a lot of local Democrats who are energized right now. A lot of them are energized largely by a dislike of the president, President Trump. They want to use that to win local office in a lot of cases, county board races and several others. How do you plan to protect against that national Trump storyline from costing the party seats in some of these local elections coming up this year?
I think you have to keep coming back to what's happening right here in our blocks, in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our city offices. Yes, the national level is important and it's big and it gets a lot of notoriety, but it starts back with our own city governments, with our own villages, with our own little townships and things that are within our county that are the real life blood of our citizens. That's where you're impacted on a daily basis by what happens, not so much what happens in Washington. Yes, that's important, and yes, it can have impact. But to point up to Washington and say, well, what's happening there should be why we decide what's still happening here, I think is ignoring the reality of our situations and is not giving true, honest evaluation of what's the truly right decisions to make to impact our community, our children and our grandchildren. I think you keep bringing the focus back on what our representatives are doing here, not what they're doing thousands of miles away, and that doesn't impact us nearly as much as what's happening right here and now.
And ultimately, do you think that McLean County Republicans will have to put a little distance between themselves and President Trump if he continues to be,
What I say is that the media and those that were defeated in the last election have done an excellent job is framing the conversation, and they have framed the conversation, and everybody is joining in on that conversation. I say there's a whole nother conversation that needs to take place when you have the positive things that are happening out of the result of this administration in Washington, with the economy resurging and jobs coming back and all of that happening, our security being strengthened, the military being finally recognized that they needed more, all of those things are happening, then that should be the focus of the conversation. But because there's loud voices in certain PowerPoint places that are shouting out this other discussion, that's overpowering a lot of the conversation that should be happening. I say that what we need to focus is the conversation on our county again. Come back to what we're doing, what we're deciding, and what we are need to have happen in order to have our county economically successful, have the safety within our streets, have basic services that are solid and provided for. Those are the things that make a difference in our daily life.
How did you get involved in politics originally? Can you remember your first campaign you worked on?
I actually started just volunteering, working in the Republican office, answering a phone, you know, and handing out yard signs. And but then I had the privilege of getting more involved in the committee on the board and serving there. And I was privileged to be approached by Erica Harold and she asked me to serve as her county coordinator in her congressional bid. I just have the ultimate respect for Erica, and she and I have become friends and have just enjoyed an interesting watch and how things have developed for her. And she has been such an encouragement for me that when this opportunity came along, she was actually one of the first persons I talked to. I said, asking her, do you think I can do this? Do you think I can step up and serve in this area? And she was just very, very much encouraging, as have been all of the elected officials that I've spoken with as well.
Well, if you were to be selected in April to become the new chair of the McLean County Republican Party, I'd be willing to bet that you'll be the only party chair in the state that also runs a nonprofit theater organization on the side.
Can you talk? A weird combination.
It's a good combination. can you talk a little bit about your passion for theater and that part of your life?
Well, my degree in coming out of college, I was a high school teacher. I was a certified teacher, taught in actually all points of the world. Having married a military officer, we were stationed overseas, so I've taught overseas. I've taught on both coasts. My degree was in theater and communications. And that led to a lot of different avenues. I've actually sat in your seat working radio many, many years ago. My passion for theater dovetailed with everything I was doing most of my life. And now, but I never would have thought at this stage of my life that I would have the privilege of working with high school students again, which was my initial draw to being, I wanted to be the beloved high school drama teacher, you know. That was a passion when I was much in a younger career. And now, what do I find myself doing but working with students ages 7 to 19. We've created a not-for-profit Crossroads Area Student Theater, and we are doing theater year-round right here in this community. I have students from all over the county, actually, that are involved in this. We just launched our rehearsal for our junior cast musical. We're in rehearsal right now. And it has been an amazing, fun journey. I love seeing kids discover their gifts and their talents, whether it's backstage, on stage, and what costumes, makeup, giving them a chance to exercise and find those gifts in a safe environment and one that is God-honoring. We are a faith-based organization, and I am blessed with 50-something parent families and about 70 kids right now that are involved in the program year-round, and it's a hoot.
It's Connie Beard, who's hoping to become the next chair of the McLean County Republican Party. I'm Ryan Denham.
Find more election coverage at our website, WGLT.org, and our new Facebook group. Just search for Election 2018 in McLean County. The primary election is March 20th. You're listening to Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping individuals and families create solid plans for the future through a combination of investment options and life insurance. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Coming up, get to know McLean County musician Chris Corkery. He's opening for Paul Thorne at the Castle Theater tonight. John Norton has that interview ahead during Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The hurricane-related problems in Puerto Rico aren't going anywhere. In September, you heard from some local residents whose relatives in the U.S. island territory were affected by the devastating hurricane that stormed the island last fall. One of those you heard from was Denali Flores Rodriguez, a Hispanic studies professor at Illinois Wesleyan University. She, along with Illinois State University senior Stephanie Rodriguez, are planning a Puerto Rico teach-in this Friday. The purpose? To inform the public about the lingering destruction and emotional trauma left by the hurricane. Flores Rodriguez tells GLT's Judy Valente that 5 months after the hurricane struck, some of her family members still are without electrical service.
My mom still doesn't have any power. 2 days ago, the Secretary of Energy over there said that people can expect power is going to be reestablished in June.
And so that's going on more than 5 months now that she's been without power. How has your mother been living?
She's depressed. She was telling me that she just wants to prepare her morning coffee in her own house rather than going out and buy it every day. Same thing with her groceries, cleaning her clothes. So all of the little things that we take for granted, she cannot do on a regular basis. She's depressed. She says that she wants to get to her normal routine, but there is no normal routine anymore.
What about health care and things like that? I assume your mother is of a certain age.
Thank God my mom, it's healthy. She hasn't had any problem. But there is definitely not all the hospitals are working at capacity. There are still places without electricity, without energy that depend on generators.
You're here with Stephanie Rodriguez, who is an ISU student and editor of the Vedette newspaper. Stephanie, do you have relatives in Puerto Rico who have been affected?
Yeah, actually, my father lives there. Him and most of my family from both sides of my family. So I live here with my mom and my grandma from her side and my brother, but most of our extended family and my father's family lives down there. And it's been a hard time for them. Some people, one of my cousins, actually, she was fortunate enough to be able to move to Florida recently because she was just, it's too much. My dad, he just bought a house down there like a month before the hurricane hit. So he's kind of stuck there because he said otherwise he would also move to Florida. So it's been a hard time for them. He also doesn't have power right now.
What about the roads and things like that? What do you hear, Stephanie?
I remember in the beginning, he said it was just horrible, like to get gas. It was like you had to take a whole day out. It was like 10-hour lines to get gas, to do this, to do that. Everything is bad. You have to conserve what you have and be careful about how you do it and how you spend your time and things like that.
Well, for both of you, people in Houston and Texas who were affected and even Florida don't have these problems. It seems that things were able to be cleared up pretty quickly. What has been your reaction to the fact that the people in Texas and in Florida have been able to recover much more quickly than the people in Puerto Rico? Stephanie, what do you see the situation is? Is there some sort of a double standard about how Puerto Rico has been treated versus how U.S. mainland citizens have been treated?
Puerto Rico, honestly, before this, hadn't really been in the news that much because people don't know about it. Most people didn't know that we're U.S. citizens, that we're American citizens. So that's probably one of the problems as well. And it was clear that Irma did destroy part of Florida, but Irma wasn't as strong as Maria, and that's just a fact. It was a Category 5 hurricane, and 3 million U.S. citizens on the island were left without power, were left without food, were left without water, and then after a while, people stopped caring because it's not in the news. It's wild to me that that happened because they are American citizens, and just because we aren't a state, we are under the power of the U.S. We depend on the U.S. for so much. We have U.S. currency. We're citizens. So for them to basically forget about us compared to how with Harvey and with Irma, it's insane. And I just think it has a lot to do with the fact that because we aren't a state, it's not seen as important.
Both of you are helping to organize what's being called the Puerto Rico teach-in. What are you hoping to teach? Who are you hoping to teach about Puerto Rico, Dr. Flores?
Well, one of the things that we are going to touch base on, it's what is the relationship between the U.S. and Puerto Rico? What are the points in common? What are the points in the differences? How are we treated? And I think that's important for people to know. We have a long history with the United States, and the fact that right now we have, after the hurricane crisis, Puerto Rico is the largest blackout and the longest blackout in U.S. history. Puerto Rico has more citizens than 21 states in the United States, and we are not taking that into account. I mean, if we compare that with any other state, with any other situation in the United States, this would be news over and over and over, and we are fading out, and we cannot fade out. So that's one of the things that, we hope to accomplish, we hope to convey to the attendants.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Judy Valente. I'm with Denali Flores Rodriguez of the Hispanic Studies Department at Illinois Wesleyan and ISU student Stephanie Rodriguez. We're talking about the upcoming Puerto Rico teach-in. Stephanie, you're obviously interested in getting students more aware of the situation. What do you think their awareness level is at this point, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, I mean, I've been here for 4 years at ISU. I know kids aren't watching the news or things like that. Everything is on your phone. So it's really what you're seeing on your phone. So I think events like this, they really help to bring awareness. And like my story from my family or Dr. Flores Rodriguez's family, you get that personal feel. You see people that are actually affected by this crisis, not just, oh, it's them. It's people here and real life people with stories.
How will you be reaching out to the students to let them be better informed in this teach-in?
Well, I mean, I'll talk about my father and the things that they're telling me and things like that, and just also how hard it was to be here and be so far away and not be able to feel like you couldn't really help them in that moment as much as I wanted to. Also, my grandma that lives with me here at home, she was visiting her sister during that time, and my mom was just going crazy, wanting to bring her back, but the airports weren't working, and everything was just crazy. And just that sense of turmoil and not knowing, I want people to understand that it's hard and it's real, and I want students to see that it affects them because we are part of the U.S.
It is not just college students you're reaching out to. In fact, as I understand it, this teach-in was instigated by high school students in the community who wanted to know more about what's going on with Puerto Rico. How did that come about, Dr. Flores Rodriguez?
Well, there is a sociology class in one of the local high schools, and two students who are not Puerto Rican, who don't have Puerto Rican family, actually, that the project started during the time of the hurricane, and they decided that it would be good to create a benefit concert. They contacted Dr. Maura Tormorn
of Illinois State University of the Latin American Studies program here.
Yeah, and she contacted us, and it has been a joint effort ever since.
What do you hope to tell the high school students?
I just want to, what I hope to let them know is just that we need help. We still need help, even after all of these months. They're not going to get power until June. That's incredibly unfair. That's not livable. It's not right. So I just want them, high school students, college students, community members, anyone who will listen, just to know that we need help. It's really it.
There is a teach-in that you'll be doing, but then there's also a component of this that's a concert. Just talk a little bit about what the concert will be about, when, where.
So the concert is going to be dancing, it's going to be singing, and it's going to be instruments. So all from local community members. So that's what we hope for people to enjoy, to become aware of how this affects them, because that's one part that we hope to address as well in the teaching. Right now, there is a crisis in hospitals all over the mainland because basic medical supplies, such as IV bags, mini IV bags, are scarce because those are produced in Puerto Rico, which is one of the biggest pharmaceutical hubs in the States. What affects us affects the mainland, and everything is tied together. So come learn a little bit about how it affects us, what you can do here, and enjoy.
Denali Flores Rodriguez is an assistant professor in the Department of Hispanic Studies at Illinois Wesleyan. Stephanie Rodriguez is a senior at Illinois State University. She is the president of the Spanish Club, an editor at the Vidette student newspaper, and involved in the upcoming Puerto Rico teach-in. Thank you both for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you so much.
I'm Judy Valente.
The Puerto Rico teach-in is from 3 to 5 p.m. tomorrow in the Jaime Escalante room of the Hewitt and Manchester Halls at Illinois State. That program is free and open to the public. There will be a benefit concert to raise funds for hurricane relief on Monday, January 22nd at the Normal Theater. You're listening to Sound Ideas.
Whether you're looking back at 2017 or looking ahead into the new year, big stories are everywhere.
The standard deduction nearly doubled.
Kim warned the U.S. that its mainland is within
allegations of sexual harassment and abuse.
So when you just need to get caught up or you want to dig deep, count on Morning Edition for the latest updates with all the background you need to put it into perspective. Listen every day.
Hear Morning Edition Monday through Friday, now starting at 4 a.m. on GLT.
Support for GLT comes from ESA, Eye Surgical Associates, providing innovative treatment and eye-correcting surgeries for a wide range of eye conditions, including cataracts, macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, and glaucoma. You can see the difference at eyesurgicalassociates.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. From time to time, critics of property tax rates in Bloomington Normal have suggested doing away with the Twin Cities Home Rule Authority. That has not advanced, perhaps because the majority or major property tax consumers are the schools, not municipal governments. But Rockford voters did away with Home Rule Authority a generation ago. Leaders have regretted it since, and voters will get a chance this spring to decide whether or not to return the city to Home Rule status. IPR's Jenna Dooley has more on the designation used by many larger communities around Illinois.
So what is home rule anyway, and why does it matter in 2018? Bobby Holsworth is a co-chair for the effort to bring back home rule to Rockford. She gives this example.
What happens is that a senior home, nursing home, frequently might call the Rockford Fire Department for assistance if they have a resident fall, to assist that resident back into bed and get them stable. The state doesn't allow us to charge anything for that. So by having home rule, we could set a fair and reasonable fee for those lift assists.
Here's another one. Since Rockford is not a home rule city, leaders can charge only the state's cap and license fees for video gaming in the city. Home rule communities can charge what they want, and Rockford has among the highest number of gaming machines in the entire state.
By diversifying our revenue sources, we believe that we can lessen the burden on our property owners by reducing property taxes and/or funding more of the city's expenses through other sources.
Home rule became an option when it was included as a provision in the 1970 Illinois Constitution. Communities with at least 25,000 residents were given home rule powers automatically. Smaller communities can let voters decide if they want it. Far more communities have added home rule powers than have taken them away. But Rockford voters did just that in 1983. Voters were losing patience with city leaders after several property tax increases. John McNamara was mayor back when voters stripped the city of its home rule status. Now his son Tom is the mayor of Rockford and thinks the timing is right to bring it back.
If I misuse it as a mayor, if you believe I misuse it, vote me out, but keep the tool that'll help move our community forward.
Holsworth says it's more about keeping the focus on Rockford.
We have five local legislators who do a good job and work hard in trying to represent Rockford in Springfield. But of course, the state has a lot of issues of its own and a lot of difficulty handling even those issues, and we're way down the list.
Northern Illinois University Professor Emeritus James Banovitz became one of the state's experts on home rule powers.
And the issue is primarily always tax policy, because that's something that the voters can see and measure what's going out of their pockets. If one looks at the record of home rule on a statewide basis, one sees that, as a matter of fact, now as we sit here and look at it some 40, 44 years later, the property taxes, which are always the focal point of these discussions, they're going to raise our property taxes way up. Property taxes in home rule communities tend to be lower than property taxes in non-home rule communities.
Again, because municipalities can lean on other sources of revenue to boost their budget. Banovitz crisscrossed the state learning more about how home rule was used by different communities.
People who want government powers kept strictly limited are happy with the constraints imposed by Springfield. Others who have the view that local people should control local tax policy.
One major criticism against home rule is that it unfairly targets those who would have to absorb extra taxes and fees approved at the local level.
The biggest person that's going to get hurt under home rule in our community is small business, and that's a shame.
That's Jim Hughes, a former Rockford alderman and county board member. He's against home rule and is trying to educate voters about the primary ballot referendum on restoring it. He says he's working against a timeline that starts with early voting next month.
And I think that was done on purpose. I also think it's political because of a new mayor, that the consideration of putting a really hot issue like home rule on the ballot early in his term is probably a good idea for him, because then the taxpayers have 3.5 years to forget about it.
And he's not alone. Brian Legaro also is behind efforts to oppose home rule in Rockford. He ran as a Republican in the Rockford mayoral election last spring and lost to McNamara.
We don't really have a revenue problem. We have for years, had a spending problem here in Rockford.
Both Hughes and Legaro say current leaders haven't earned enough trust yet to increase their local authority. Holsworth counters that there is a safeguard within the process.
Everything that would be done would have to be done by the city council. It's not as though any of these things would automatically happen simply because we have home rule. So you'd have the whole process that you have whenever the city council considers a new ordinance. And they discuss it in open meetings and listen to constituents and debate the pros and cons before they do anything in a final fashion.
But Legaro is skeptical.
A lot of people are very busy, you know, working, raising kids, making their mortgage payments. They don't have time to come down to a city council meeting. And another thing, I've spoke at in front of city council a number of times, and a lot of the times their backs are turned to you. It's like they're not even really listening to you.
At its core, home rule isn't intended to be one size fits all. Its use varies depending on local leadership and the level of citizen engagement. Holsworth says that's why she believes the timing is right for Rockford voters to approve it.
I'll tell you where my passion comes from. My passion comes from a more of a civic place, where I believe that home rule is a reflection of our community's willingness to step up the plate and be engaged citizens and to work with our elected officials to make sure that this community is well run.
Rudy Valdez also ran against Mayor McNamara as an independent in the last election. While he is in favor of returning the city to home rule, he says it's really about checking the pulse of citizens.
We should have the community have the voice to decide, yes, we want it, or no, we don't, after they're informed. There hasn't been a choice in 35 years to make a decision one way or the other.
But Rockford voters will have their say again on the spring primary ballot March 20th. I'm Jenna Dooley.
And I'm Mike McCurdy. This is Sound Ideas with music from singer-songwriter Chris Corkery.
When the midnight comes, don't cry for me. Walk in these streets all alone. You get another chance in this life that they say. Minds are coming.
When Paul Thorne returns to play the Castle Theater tonight in downtown Bloomington, you might hear this song from opening musician Chris Corkery. In some ways, tonight is an unlikely event for Corkery. Unlike many musicians, music wasn't a part of his DNA growing up. It didn't become a larger part of his life until his college days. GLT's John Norton caught up with Corkery yesterday at his home in Saybrook. Speaking at the kitchen table with his two dogs, a lab, and a collie hovering nearby, Corkery told GLT's John Norton he just wasn't exposed to music as a child.
Mom and Dad had two records, Carole King, Tapestry.
That's a good album.
Good album. And Cat Stevens, T for the Tillerman. But they didn't really listen to a whole lot around the house, you know. So it was all, with my dad, it was all WBBM, you know, AM radio.
News radio, 78.
Yes, yeah, right.
Traffic on the 8s, right?
Exactly. So yeah, anything that I just kind of had to discover on my own and seek it out.
Was there something that all of a sudden the light switch went on?
Yeah. It was the Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory record.
You heard that on the radio or something?
I heard that. Actually, I was in the dorm room at U of I, and I remember hearing Wonderwall down from a couple of dorm rooms down. And I just was like, that acoustic figure, you know, the intro to it really kind of transfixed me. So I kind of delved into those guys. And with those guys, obviously borrowing from the Beatles, I guess you could really say it was their two Beatles, like, greatest hits, 1963 to 66, and then it was 67 to 70. There was a Red and Blue double disc. And once I got that, it was really all over, and then I started playing guitar.
So the Beatles hit you like a lot of teenagers back in the early 60s, but
absolutely,
you were just 30 years later when it hit you.
And that's what got me playing guitar. I came back home to ISU to go to school, and I'd break up with a girlfriend, you know, and I rented a guitar, or my mom actually rented a bass and an acoustic guitar for Christmas. And I started off on the bass, which I still love playing bass, but the acoustic guitar kind of just grabbed me. That was also when the Nirvana Unplugged kind of thing was going on, the whole MTV Unplugged deal. And then I got two big tablature books, Beatles Volume 1 and Volume 2, and just started learning like 8 days a week. And then that really kind of got me into, I guess that was the bug that bit me, you know.
Well, I'm heading out west when the morning comes. I'll kiss you goodbye, but I won't wake you up. I'm bound for Colorado, wide open and free, reaching the mountains.
The name of the song is Denver. It's Chris Corkery, who plays at the Castle Theater tonight, opening for Paul Thorne. That'll be a fun show.
That'll be a great show.
Yeah. And as I listen to this song, and I hear the line about taking I-80 across Nebraska,
yeah,
right, to get to Denver. I mean, did you really do that?
No, this was, yeah, that's funny. I still haven't been out to Denver, but the thing was, that was right at the time when I had left playing with my band at the time, and
what was the name?
The Dirty Hands Band.
Okay.
It was kind of like a southern rock kind of thing. But I was trying to do solo shows, and I had a friend that could line up some shows in Denver. But I just really liked the imagery. It was kind of like a metaphor for being emancipated from playing in the group to my own kind of thing, kind of going off on your own, you know,
okay,
parallel to that.
Well, what struck me was the I-80 reference through Nebraska, and it's solo, acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of Springsteen's Nebraska album.
Oh, too kind. Yeah.
Is that something that's in your wheelhouse?
Oh, yeah. I love that record. That was another one that came later on, but Used Cars, Reason to Believe. I mean, the title track, that was with The Boss. That's kind of my favorite. Actually, my favorite one from him. Not to knock on the East Street Band, one of the most fantastic bands, you know, ever. But this darkness of that record really spoke to me.
Huh.
But yeah, I appreciate that.
Take the Interstate 80 through Nebraska fields, through the skyline of Lincoln, baby, stop for a beer. Waiting so long to catch a break, trying to learn from all my mistakes.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with Chris Corkery in his kitchen out in Saybrook with the dogs barking outside and coming out for a little pet on the inside.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool. I like this down-home feel.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely down-home out here.
What are you doing out in Saybrook? I mean, you're from Lexington, right?
Well, I'm originally from Bloomington, and I lived in Lexington for several years, but I'm living now in Saybrook with my girlfriend, who's that's her dogs, yeah, Sadie and Jax. And
hey, Sadie.
Actually, I have a history with Saybrook from playing at the Shady Nook for many, many years, and that kind of got started. I got my thing kind of started doing rural shows in McLean County, and I know we're in the Champaign stuff, by playing uptown here at the Shady Nook.
Well, let's talk about the Shady Nook. I mean, it's not anymore, right?
I know. It's new owners. There's still the bar there, but
I mean, such a great venue. It brought in all these great artists in this little town.
I know. Incredible. You know, the Bottle Rockets played there.
I mean, Robert O'Keefe played out there, didn't he?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think so. They
bringing in guys like that, Joe Ely and guys like that.
Yeah,
right?
Real singer songwriters. And what I always loved about the Nook is because people would come up, and it wasn't just a bar where people, you're competing with the game or people wanted to play on their phones or whatnot. People came up to listen. There's a listening room, and I always remember playing there. You'd hear pin drop. You know, people really loved and appreciated. I played up there a couple times. I mean, it's been a long time playing there, many years, but I also do the Saybrook Stars and Stripes Festival in June, which is downtown, or uptown, I should say.
Tonight I'm leaving this town. I'm done with hanging around. I'm gonna find my baby at the shady nook, gonna drink until I'm falling down. I'll have it with the people I meet hanging around this old town.
Let's go back to you transitioning from being in a band to being a solo artist.
Yeah.
Being in a band, you're with probably 3, 4, or 5 other guys, depending. Now you're on your own. There's some good and bad to that, right? So when you're in a band, if things go bad or good, you know, you share it.
Right.
How scary is it, or how rewarding is it, both, when you made that transition to being a solo artist?
It's definitely a double-edged kind of thing. You know, with the band, you know, it's not just all on you. Whereas with solo, you know, like tonight at the show with Paul Thorne, I mean, it's literally the spotlight's just on you, so it's kind of sink or swim. But I also like the creative element. You can call audibles with your set list and change tempos of songs. It's liberating creatively. I mean, when it really hit me was when I did a show in Chenoa on a Friday a couple years ago, and it was just me and my father-in-law at the time, and the bartender, you know. And the next night, I opened up for Robert Earl Keane at the Castle Theater, and it was almost so loud. I mean, 600. That was the first time I'd faced a crowd that big. So it's just on you. You got to kind of deliver, you know. But I like that, the pressure. I mean, I think I perform best solo and when kind of like the heat is on, you know.
Thank you.
What's it like being up on stage when, especially you're a solo artist, and people are listening and watching intently to everything you're saying, everything you're doing?
Yeah.
Is that a weird feeling?
It is kind of weird because a lot of times you'll just be like, wow, that people are really glued in to what you're doing. But it's really rewarding and awesome because, you know, you're taking people to that moment, kind of expressing yourself, and they connect with the song, maybe in the same way that you're conveying it, but also, and they're bringing their own meaning to it. I remember Bob Dylan had a quote, a good song is supposed to create the illusion of time stopping. And I always really love that, because especially on the slower ones and at the Castle, you'll be just kind of digging in and playing and singing and closing your eyes maybe, and then you open up, you know, maybe your eyes at the end or the third verse, and everyone is just transfixed. So it's weird, but powerful and fun. I mean, I love it, you know.
I mean, you're sharing your soul with 600 people.
Right. Well, it's cathartic, too, because if you have a song that you've written that's about maybe past trials and tribulations or pain and what have you, for me, it's a release. And for people to connect on any of what I'm creating, I'm just really thankful, so it's pretty cool.
Just a wasteland with the shopping mall, tall skyscrapers and concert hall, the real American on Isle of Lake. Well, I'm just a California.
Chris Corkery singing about California here on GLT Sound Ideas. How about one more question before we go here?
Sure.
It's a broad question. It's about music in itself and what it does to you. For a guy who really didn't have a connection to music when you were growing up, which is a little different than a lot of musicians, right? Mm-hmm. You came to it late. What would your life be without music now?
I can't. Wow. Good question. It's hard for me to even conceptualize that. Music saved my life in a lot of ways for many years.
How so?
Well, with, you know, with just being able to kind of channel your feelings. I mean, you know, the parents got divorced, breakup, and my own divorce and such, like, and then not, you know, seeing your kids as much and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the growing up stuff. It's a way for me to channel that into something positive. So it's a way to create, and it's cathartic. It's a way of channeling yourself, of getting those emotions out. And you feel better, you know, writing and performing and singing. I mean, at least speaking for myself. And so I'm just really blessed to be able to do that, to be able to channel my feelings and emotions into something positive. Music is, you know, my life. It's a blessing. I'm really happy with the way things turned out, you know.
Bloomington Normal Chris Corkery, or Bloomington-born Chris Corkery, speaking with GLT's John Norton yesterday in the kitchen of his Saybrook home. Corkery opens for Paul Thorne tonight at the Castle Theater. You can hear Corkery's music during GLT's Acousticity 24/7 at WGLT.org. Bruce Bergethon hosts 2 hours of Acousticity tonight, beginning at 7 on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Train till falling down. Hey, well, tonight I'm leaving this town. I'm done hanging around. Find my baby at the shade end of gonna drink until I'm falling down.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, Bloomington Normal's only locally owned and operated broadcast media outlet. Find the individual stories and interviews you hear on Sound Ideas at WGLT.org. Thanks to Ryan Denham, John Norton, and Judy Valente for their help on today's show. You can also subscribe to the full show podcast at our website and at iTunes. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.